Let's begin with a word of prayer and we'll get started. Father, we thank you again for this privilege of being in your house. We thank you for this time to look into your word. And we pray for your blessing upon this time, that everything said and done would be honorable and pleasing to you. For it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Okay, guys, today we're going to be doing Samson. I can't even spell the first slide right. I put an extra P in there. Samson. There we go, Samson. Okay, question, who's this movie? What's the name of the movie? Oh, good job, good job. Next question, who are the two actors? Very good. That's one, that's 50%. What's the other one? Her name begins with an H. Her last initial's an L. Hedy Lamarr. Victor Mature, Hedy Lamarr. Angela Lansbury was in this too. This is a 1949 film. And who directed it for bonus points?
Robert Rodriguez.
Well, if I said the Ten Commandments, who would it be? Same guy. Cecil B. DeMille did the same thing. So there you go. Culturally enriched. We'll continue on. Oops. Okay. This is an eye chart for you. It's a map of that I found in Judges, or for Judges, that we're talking specifically about Samson today. And part of our, let me get my finger in here. One of the cities to start with is this Zora over there, or Zora. That's where we're going to start everything from. That's where Samson's going to kind of grow up in around that area over there. Other places, and this is the tribe of Dan, so this is Dan's area through here. Tinma up here, north of that. Again, I hope y'all can see that. That's one of the towns of note that we have. Down over here, we have Ashkelon, and then down here, we have Gaza. And then pretty much between Tinma that you see there and Eshtal, that's going to be the Valley of Soek, and that's another notable place for us. Here's another. This one, for whatever reason, was a little bit blurry, but it's a little bit another picture of the area that we're talking about. And again, let me get my finger over here. This is going to be the area that we're talking about right in there for our hero today. Now, what I hope to do is just go through these chapters, and then I've got some notes that we can go through as well. And I'm going to start. Some of you guys have the other chapters. I want help reading through this. But it starts out, "Now the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord, so that the Lord gave them into the hands of the Philistines 40 years. There was a certain man of Zorah, of the family of Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and had borne no children. Then the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, 'Behold now, you are barren and have borne no children, but you have conceived and give, but you shall conceive and give birth to a son. Now therefore be careful not to drink wine or strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing. For behold, you shall conceive and give birth to a son, and no razor shall come upon his head, for the boy shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines.' And the woman came and told her husband, saying, 'A man of God came to me, and his appearance was like the appearance of an angel of God, very awesome. And I did not ask him where he came from, nor did he tell me his name. But he said to me, "Behold, you shall conceive and give birth to a son. And now you shall not drink wine or strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing, for the boy shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death.' Then Manoah entreated the Lord and said, 'O Lord, please let this man of God, whom you have sent, come to us again, that he may teach us what to do for the boy who is to be born.' God listened to the voice of Manoah, and the angel of God came again to the woman and came to the woman as she was sitting in the field, but Manoah, her husband, was not with her. So the woman ran quickly and told her husband, 'Behold, the man who came the other day has appeared to me.' Then Manoah arose and followed his wife, and when he came to the man, he said to him, 'Are you the man who spoke to the woman?' And he said, 'I am.' Manoah said, 'Now, when your words come to pass, what shall be the boy's mode of life and his vocation?' So the angel of the Lord said to Manoah, 'Let the woman pay attention to all that I have said. She should not eat anything that comes from the vine, nor drink wine or strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing. Let her observe all that I commanded.' Then Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, 'Please let us detain you, that we may prepare a young goat for you.' The angel of the Lord said to Manoah, "Though you detain me, I will not eat your food. But if you prepare a burnt offering, then offer it to the Lord." For Manoah did not know that he was the angel of the Lord. Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, "What is your name, so that when your words come to pass, we may honor you?" But the angel of the Lord said to him, "Why do you ask my name, saying it is wonderful?" So Manoah took the young goat with the grain offering and offered it on the rock to the Lord. And he performed wonders while Manoah and his wife looked on. For it came about when the flames went up from the altar toward heaven that the angel of the Lord ascended in the flame of the altar. When Manoah and his wife saw this, they fell on their faces to the ground. Now the angel of the Lord did not appear to Manoah again, or his wife again. Then Manoah knew that he was the angel of the Lord. So Manoah said to his wife, "We will surely die, for we have seen God." But his wife said to him, "If the Lord had desired to kill us, he would not have accepted a burnt offering and a grain offering from our hands, nor would he have shown us all these things, nor would he have let us hear things like this at this time." Then the woman gave birth to a son and named him Samson, and the child grew up, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him in Manhadam between Zorah and Eshtol. So this is chapter one that we've gone through. And there are some things that I just wanted to bring out as we look at this verse. And as it starts out, we see that there's always been a cycle associated with Judges, right? Israel gets cross with God, disobeys God. There's going to be someone brought up to oppress them. Israel's going to cry out to God for help. God's going to raise a mighty deliverer. Everything's smooth until the deliverer dies, and then we go in this cycle again. They fall away and all this kind of thing. What's different about this time with Samson now that we're going to see is that there's no crying out to the God about anything. The Philistines are there. They're oppressing the Israelites, but they're okay with that. It's like, okay, this is the way it's supposed to be. Philistines are in charge. We're going to live with it. So that's what's different about this time now this time's gone on. And again, I've said, you know, we have these cycles, right? Well, this cycle is actually kind of a decaying cycle. Yeah, things get better, but they're never quite as good as they were before. And everything kind of goes down here. And that's the way their spiritual life is right now. Now, we talked about the Philistines also. And the Philistines, this is going to be the third time the Philistines have shown up. Or it's going to be talked about Philistines oppressing them and that kind of thing. The Philistines, there's some controversy about where the Philistines came from. Some people say that they came via the sea from Crete and came over and landed there. And some people say they came from the north through a territory and started occupying that land. What the scholars do say is that the idea behind these people that call themselves the Philistines were they were going after Egypt. And Ramesses III was in charge of Egypt at the time. And Ramesses was able to beat them back and say, "No, you're not taking Egypt." Well, Ramesses was smart, too. He said, "These guys are good fighters. I'm just going to make them my mercenaries." And so on our map, when we show you the Gaza and Ashkelon, I think that's the way it's pronounced. We'll see those towns later. Those are going to be Philistine strongholds where the Philistines are hanging out, waiting for Ramesses to say something. But in the meantime, they're looking for their own land, too. And remember, with Joshua, they just came over the Jordan from the other direction, and they're settling into the land. So we've got the Philistines kind of on the west side and the Israelites on the east side, and now they're kind of knocking heads. So that's what's going on. We're going to see the Philistines be major contenders for this area during the lifetime of Samson. It'll spill over to Samuel, through Saul, and finally David. And at the point when David's king, that's when the Philistines eventually get run out. But they're going to be a thorn in Israel's side for quite a while. And I said there was no crying out of the people. It's the third encounter with the Philistines. Now, in this case, Manoah is introduced differently from other male characters in the Bible. When we read about most of the guys, it's going to be, you know, Isaac, the son of Abraham, or something like that. And they'll list his town and his tribe, or his tribe and his town. In this case, when Manoah is introduced, he's going to be called a certain man from this area of Zor, from this clan or this family of Dan. They're not calling them a tribe. It's the family of Dan. Oh, by the way, his name is Manoah. So it's not quite the same, I guess I want to say, honor or respect shown to him as other patriarchs have been given. It's kind of backing in the back door to kind of introduce this character. And just by way of that, too, Samson's mom's name's not given. We don't know what her name is. For whatever reason, she's not given. But the angel of the Lord's going to appear to her first. She seems to be the one that's more spiritually attuned to how things are. And even with that, the angel has to remind her, remember that Nazirite vow? Remember, you can't have the strong wine. You can't have wine, strong drink. He's going to have his head cut. No unclean animals. Remember those things? He's reinforcing what she should have known. And the Bible doesn't say she doesn't know it, but he is reinforcing what she should know. And again, this is all kind of background for the family that Samson's going into. Now, I said the announcement was given to his mother first. Usually it was the father who was told, your wife's going to have a baby, in this case. And when she hears it, she gets excited. She believes him. She said this is she's not exactly sure if this is God or a man of God or a representative from God, but she respects this person. And Manoah is a little bit more skeptical about how things are, who this guy is, because he wants to see him a second time. If this is real God, then send this guy back. I want to talk to him. And he'll call him a man. And finally, we get to the point where they realize it's an angel of the Lord that they call him. So there's this progressive understanding of who this person is rather than by faith accepting it was God at the beginning. Samson's name was given by his mother, which isn't unusual, but it means little son or sunny boy. And one of the towns that's not too far from them is this town called Beth Shemesh, which is just south of them. But it was a center for the worship of the sun. Now, whether or not that had any bearing on Samson's name or not, I don't know. But what I can tell you is that little son or sunny boy isn't a name that would necessarily reflect the Hebrew faith, if you will, like a name like Joshua or something like that. This was something that she had picked out. But that's the family he's coming into, all right? The other thing, too, about this whole time now is that this Nazirite vow that he's supposed to be going through, his mom's got to keep it up as well, which is kind of unusual. Remember, the Nazirite vow is a vow that's supposed to be temporary and voluntary. Typically, it's temporary for a special time or a specific time or a specific purpose. But now Samson's his life is going to be a Nazirite this whole time, from the conception till his death. This is a lot different from anything else that was given in the law about a Nazirite vow. And the other thing, too, again, you're not supposed to touch a corpse. I'm sorry. I had meant to mention that, but I didn't. And Judges 14, I got some guys to help me with Judges 14. If y'all have any questions or anything, feel free to ask, but I want to keep moving. So Judges 14, verse 1.
Now Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. So he went up and told his father and mother, saying, I have seen a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me as a wife. Then his father and mother said to him, is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren or among all my people that you can go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said to his father, get her for me, for she pleases me well. But his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord, that he was seeking an occasion to move against the Philistines. For at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. So Samson went down to Timnah and his father and mother, with his father and mother, and came to the vineyards of Timnah. Now, to his surprise, a young lion came roaring against him. Then the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he tore the lion apart as one would have torn apart a young goat, though he had nothing in his hand. But he did not tell his father or his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and she pleased Samson well. After some time, when he returned to get her, he turned aside to the carcass of the lion, and behold, a swarm of bees and honey were in the carcass of the lion. He took some of it in his hands and went along eating. When he came to his father and mother, he gave some to them, and they also ate. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. So his father went down to the woman, and Samson gave a feast there, for young men used to do so. And it happened when they saw him that they brought 30 companions to be with him. Then Samson said to them, "Let me pose a riddle to you. If you can correctly solve and explain it to me within the 7 days of the feast, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. But if you cannot explain it to me, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing." And they said to him, "Pose your riddle, that we may hear it." So he said to them, "Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet." Now for 3 days, they could not explain the riddle.
Rocky, are you next? Should be 15, verse 15.
It came to pass on the seventh day that they said unto Samson's wife, "Entice thy husband, that he may declare unto us the riddle, lest we burn thee and thy father's house with fire. Have ye called us to take that we have? Is it not so?" And Samson's wife wept before him and said, "Thou dost but hate me and lovest me not. Thou hast put forth a riddle unto the children of my people, and has not told it to me." And he said unto her, "Behold, I have not told it my father nor my mother, and shall I tell it to thee?" And she wept before him for 7 days, while their feast lasted. And it came to pass on the seventh day that he told her, because she lay sore upon him. And she told the riddle to the children of the people. And the men of the city said unto him on the seventh day, before the sun went down, "What is sweeter than honey? And what is stronger than a lion?" And he said unto them, "If ye had not plowed with my heifer, ye had not found out my riddle." And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon, and slew 30 men of them, and took their spoil, and gave change of garments unto them, which expounded the riddle. And his anger was kindled, and he went up to his father's house. But Samson's wife was given to his companion, whom he had used as his friend.
All right. Thank you, Rocky. Sam. So what type of person was Samson? This is the first chapter we get to actually meet Samson, see what he's like. First chapter was just talking about this is what's going to happen when he's born. He's coming. He's here now. So what do you think of him? What do you think, Hannah? He's what? Secretive? What else?
Women are his
weakness. Okay. Thank you, Molly. What else? He's got an anger issue. And what else? What else do we see in him?
He's got a temper,
that's for sure. What else? What else do y'all see in him?
He lacks maturity.
He poses that riddle to those 30 folks. I'll get their clothes and ends up losing it, right? And Mr. Ron said he's got a temper and anger issue. Well, he's got to travel. Remember where the wedding is and where he goes to collect the clothes, around 25, 30 miles away. So he's going to walk one way with that much anger in him, get there, kill 30 people, take their clothes, and carry it back to pay off his debt. That's a lot of anger he's got there. The one thing I noticed in here is that Samson commands his father to get her. Now then, I talked to Pastor Tim about this last night. Pastor Tim said that it was the custom of parents to get together and if their children to arrange the marriage and that kind of thing. And in some cases, the children were asked, this is what we're thinking of doing. Can I get their feedback and that kind of thing? Making sure that, if your daughter, making sure she was going to be happy with her husband or if the husband's happy with the daughter, that kind of thing. Not necessarily always, but sometimes that would happen. But in this case, Samson's just telling, get her. get her. I can't imagine talking to my dad like that. Get her. Which means, I don't know what else, you know, if he was an only child or something like that, maybe coming up for part of the time, spoiled, I don't know. But Samson's only concerned for her outward appearance. Molly said, yeah, the thing about girls, well, she looks good to me. I don't care if she can't cook. She may, nothing about making me laugh. I'm glad to be around her. No, she looks good. So he went for the trophy bride, I guess. And remember when on their trip there, Samson breaks his Nazarite vow. He reaches inside the carcass and grabs the honey. Doesn't exactly respect the Nazarite vow that he's got from birth, and he's aware of it. And his new wife is also nameless, doesn't confide in him. Now, what does that say if your wife won't talk to you about, look, these guys are pressuring me to find out what the answer to this riddle is, and they're threatening to kill me and my family if we don't come up with an answer? She doesn't tell him that. She just wants to know what the answer is at all costs, and I don't know if that means she doesn't care about him or she's afraid of him or what it may be, but there's something going on there with her and Samson that just, it's not right either.
I would take that to mean that she feels like her loyalty belongs to her family as opposed to her loyalty belonging to her husband.
Yeah.
And so she didn't feel any level of trust to him at all.
None whatsoever. Judges 15, verse 1.
And after a while, in the time of wheat harvest, it happened that Samuel visited his wife with a young goat, and he said, let me go into my wife, into her room. But her father would not permit him to go in. Her father said, I really thought that you thoroughly hated her, therefore I gave her to your companion. Is not her younger sister better than she? Please take her instead. And Samuel said to them, this... What?
Samson.
Oh, what did I say?
Samuel.
And Samson said to them, this time I shall be blameless regarding the Philistines if I harm them. Then Samson went and caught 300 foxes and took torches, turned the foxes tail to tail, and put a torch between each pair of tails. When he had set the torches on fire, he let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines and burned up both the shocks and the standing grain, as well as the vineyards and olive groves. Then the Philistines said, who has done this? And they answered, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he has taken his wife and given her to his companion. So the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. And Samson said to them, Since you would do a thing like this, I will surely take revenge on you, and after that I will cease. So he attacked them, hip and thigh, with a great slaughter. Then he went down and dwelt in the cleft of the rock at Edom. Now the Philistines went up and camped in Judah and deployed themselves against Lehi. And the men of Judah said, why have you come up against us? So they answered, we have come up to arrest Samson, to do to him as he has done to us. When 3,000 men of Judah, or then 3,000 men of Judah, went down to the cleft of the rock of Edom and said to Samson, do you not know that the Philistines rule over us? What is this you have done to us? And he said to them, as they did to me, so I have done to them.
They said to him, we have come down to find you so that we may give you into the hands of the Philistines. And Samson said to them, swear to me that you will not kill me. So they said to him, no, but we will bind you fast and give you into their hands. Yet surely we will not kill you. Then they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. When he came to Lehi, the Philistines shouted as they met him. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, so that the ropes that were on his arms were as flax that was burned with fire, and his bonds dropped from his hands. He found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, so he reached out and took it and killed 1,000 men with it. Then Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I have killed 1,000 men. It came about when he had finished speaking that he threw the jawbone from his hand, and he named that place Ramoth Lehi, Then he became very thirsty and called to the Lord and said, You have given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant. And now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? But God split the hollow place that is in Lehi so that water came out of it. When he drank, his strength returned, and he revived. Therefore he named it En-Hakkor, which is in Lehi to this day. So he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines.
Thanks, sir. Okay. First of all, I liked it when Billy said, how, when he says this, he's going to be blameless. Whatever I do, I'm going to be blameless for doing this. I just enjoy you reading that. But Samson leaves his wife. We start this chapter, Samson leaves his wife. It's his responsibility, and he's leaving that for his father-in-law. So it's like, he's at the end of chapter 14, I'm just ticked off, I'm going to dad's. And then, I don't know how much time passes by, but it's harvest time now. I'm going to go get my wife. Well, that's not happening. No, I didn't mean to do that one yet. That's not happening yet because what's supposed to happen is since he basically abandons his wife, tradition says that the best man ends up with the wife. Well, the best man ended up with the wife. That's just the way it was. She needed a husband. He was there. He was okay with it. So he's got the wife now. And the father-in-law says, nope, you're not going to touch her. Take my other daughter? That's not good enough for him. He gets bent out of shape. I liked your insight. He's immature. I can't imagine taking foxes, capturing them, putting torches on them, and setting them free in the field. Especially at harvest time. Everything's been bound up, ready for harvest, and just decimate everything. But that's what Samson did. And he's going to be blameless for whatever actions he does. He does this first. So he takes this action. The Philistines find out about it, and instead of going after Samson, they go after who? Do what? His father and his wife. They burn his father and his wife. They don't get the friend, his companion, his friend that married the girl. No, it's just the girl. She's kind of like a collateral damage, I guess. I don't know. She had nothing to do with the decision. But she's dead now, the father's dead, and Samson's ticked off again. So at this point, we read about him burning the field and everything. Then the men come up against him to fight. And that word that we read, I think, Billy, you read that, ruthlessly in verse 8, indicates that Samson literally beat them to death with his hands. It's not like he had a sword or a club or something like that. He used his hands, and I don't know how many people died as a result of that. But that's got to be pretty bloody, what he had done there. And that's the first time. That's another group of people that he kills. Now, the Philistines get ticked off about this. They want to get revenge, get even, if you will. They come to Judah. Judah acknowledges that the Philistines are their rulers. Again, just the fact that they've declined spiritually to this. We're no longer God's people. We're the Philistines are our rulers now. And they turn Samson over to him. Samson's pretty smart, though. He says, look, I'll come with you, just you guys don't kill me. Okay? So he does that part of it. He still gets tied up in ropes. He goes through the whole battle and fight and everything, taking the jawbone, killing 1,000 men and all this kind of thing. In verse 17, though, that's where we first see our first ray of hope for Samson, where he gives God the glory for the victory. He's beaten all these men down, and in verse 17, he gives God the glory. In verse 18, it's the first time that we see Samson call upon the name of the Lord, and that's because he was thirsty. He thinks, I'm going to die out here. I just had this great victory, God, and you're just going to leave me out here to die? Help me, God. And God is gracious to him. He answers his prayer, provides water for him. And then following that, we read, basically, Samson then judges Israel for 20 years. Now, I'm not sure the 20 years that he goes through now, I don't know what's going to happen during that 20 years. The Bible's kind of quiet on that. Whether or not he stays in his area or whether he travels through many of the tribes, I don't know. The only thing I do know is that Samson has had this battle. He's given God the credit for it. God's rewarded him when he's thirsty. And Samson sees God's good hand upon him. And now Samson is the judge, and he takes that on for 20 years, and he does that faithfully. And I wish that this whole story stopped right here, but we have to go on to chapter 16. And it's kind of like Pastor said earlier this morning when we were talking about Star Wars 3. And, or it's, no, yeah, it was 3. And how, man, it's kind of a bummer ending. And Pastor said, well, you knew it had to end like that. You knew what was going to happen in 4. You knew 3 had to be kind of a downer. Well, 16 is going to be a downer for us. And we got to keep going. Yes, sir.
So what does it mean when it says a fresh jawbone of a donkey? What is the impression like it was like? Yeah, I'm wondering, like, what is it fresh?
Pastor, I don't have a good answer for how fresh is fresh.
I would assume it had not yet finished rotting away. Right? It was relatively humanely deceased versus had been decaying over time. It would have broken easily, especially.
But so again, it's breaking it. So again,
it's a carcass. I don't think it was a live animal he ripped the jawbone out of, right?
Well, he didn't say how many foxes alight. The guy did not have
to. Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't have
the. Well, we're
going to.
Yes, sir.
There's another example of him violating his master's vow.
Yeah.
With another dead.
Yes.
Even when the farmers to. This I don't quite understand why God gave him a drink of water out of a dead animal's bones, which is to be another violation of the Nazarene vow. God did it, so I don't quite see the reason as to why that happened.
I didn't think it came from bones. I thought it just came from a rock. God opened the rock and water came from that.
Verse 19,
with the hollow place that is in Lehi. I don't get the end part now.
Well, I says play the hollow place that was in the jaw. So it's still KJV.
Okay.
Still indicating that it wasn't.
I don't have a good answer for that one, Mr. Ron. Yeah. I'll look into that. In Judges 16, though, we read, now Samson went to Gaza. Remember, that's the Philistine town there. And saw a harlot there and went into her. When it was told to the Gazites, saying, Samson has come here, they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the gate of the city. And they kept silent all night, saying, let us wait until morning light. Then we will kill him. Now Samson lay until midnight. And at midnight, he arose and took hold of the doors of the city gate and the two posts and pulled them up along with the bars. Then he put them on his shoulders and carried them to the top of the mountain, which is opposite Horeb. It's about 38 miles uphill, okay? After this, it came about that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. The lords of the Philistines came up to her and said to her, entice him and see where his great strength lies and how we may overpower him, that we may bind him to afflict him. Then we will give you 1,100 pieces of silver. We will each give you 1,100 pieces of silver. So Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength is and how you may be bound to afflict. Samson said to her, if they bind me with 7 fresh cords that have not been dried, then I will become weak and become like other men. Then the lords of the Philistines brought up to her 7 fresh cords that have not been dried, and she bound him with them. Now she had men lying in wait in an inner room, and she said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. But he snapped the cords as a string of toe snaps when it touches fire, so his strength was not discovered. Then Delilah said to Samson, behold, you have deceived me and told me lies. Now please tell me how you may be bound. And he said to her, if they bind me tightly with new ropes, which have not been used, then I will become weak and be like other men. So Delilah took new ropes and bound him with them and said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson, for the men were lying in wait in the inner room. But he snapped the ropes from his arms like a thread. Then Delilah said to Samson, "Up until now you have deceived me and told me lies. Tell me how you may be bound." And he said to her, "If you weave the 7 locks of my hair with the web and fasten it with a pin, then I will become weak like any other man." So while he slept, Delilah took the 7 locks of his hair and wove them into the web, and she fastened it with the pin and said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." But he awoke from his sleep and pulled out the pin of the loom and the web. Then she said to him, "How can you say, 'I love you,' when your heart is not with me? You have deceived me all these 3 times. You have deceived me these 3 times and have not told me where your great strength is." It came about when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him that his soul was annoyed to death. So he told her all that was in his heart and said to her, "A razor has never come to my head, for I've been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If I am shaved, then my strength will leave me, and I'll become weak like any other man." When Delilah saw that he had told her all that was in his heart, she sent and called the lords of the Philistines, saying, "Come up once more, for he has told me all that is in his heart." Then the lords of the Philistines, that's 5 of them, came up to her and brought the money in her hands. She made him sleep on her knees and called a man and had him shave off the 7 locks of his hair. Then she began to afflict him, and his strength left him. She said, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." And he awoke from his sleep and said, "I will go out as other times and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. Then the Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes, and they brought him down to Gaza and bound him with bronze chains, and he was a grinder in the prison. However, the hair of his head began to grow again after it was shaved off. Now the lords of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god. That's like the grain god, kind of like a symbol of fertility. And to rejoice, for they said, "Our God has given Samson, our enemy, into our hands." When the people saw him, they praised their god, for they said, "Our God has given our enemy into our hands, even the destroyer of our country, who has slain many of us." It so happened that when they were in high spirits that they said, "Call for Samson, that he may amuse us." So they called for Samson from the prison, and he entertained them, and they made him stand between the pillars. Then Samson said to the boy who was holding his hand, "Let me feel the pillars on which the house rests, that I may lean against them." Now the house was full of men and women, and all the lords of the Philistines were there. And about 3,000 men and women were on the roof looking on while Samson was amusing them. Then Samson called to the Lord and said, "O Lord God, please remember me and please strengthen me just this time, O God, that I may at once be avenged to the Philistines for my 2 eyes." Samson grasped the 2 middle pillars on which the house rested and braced himself against them, the one with his right hand and the other with his left. And Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he bent with all his might so that the house fell on the lords and all the people who were in it. So the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those whom he killed in his life. Then his brothers and all his father's household came down and took him and brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtol in the tomb of Manoah his father. Thus he had judged Israel for 20 years. Now chapter, let's see, where am I? As we start chapter 16 on this thing, Gaza's no place to be, right? He went there looking for a prostitute. And just not something you're supposed to be doing. But the thing that comes to that I try and wonder, why would he do something like this? Remember, now he's probably about somewhere between 38 and 40 years old, something like that. And there's the old Bruce Springsteen song that talks about glory days, how they pass you by. And I'm wondering if Samson just wants to relive some of that young days of going to kick the Philistines. And the best way to do it is go down to Gaza, where they are, and just pick a fight. I know they'll be lying in wait for me. It's been 20 years, and they're still ticked off at him. Again, I don't know what's been going on during that 20 years that he's been there, but they still don't like him. They killed a bunch of their friends, and so they hold a grudge pretty well. Now, Samson loved Delilah, but the Bible doesn't indicate that she loved him whatsoever, right? I can tell you that the 1,100 shekels is about 34 pounds of silver. And there were five guys willing to pay her 34 pounds. That's 170 pounds of silver she was looking at getting once Samson was knocked off. So that was the only thing motivating her. And I don't know if at this point in his life he was just lonely. The Bible doesn't really seem to indicate that Samson had any kind of family, because when it came time for burying, it was his father's household. Whoops. It was his father's household. It was my family. It was his father's household, but nothing's really mentioned of a wife or anything like that that's coming to bury him. He does have brothers, it says, but I don't know too much about that part of it. The Bible just doesn't seem to indicate that. But if he's lonely and he's putting up with this woman, she, to the point of death, it says that he was just vexed by her until he finally told her what was going on. I can't imagine staying in a relationship like that. She's lied to him, she's had guys waiting to kill him, and he still hangs around. Pardon?
She didn't even hide it, so.
No, she doesn't hide it. And he doesn't care that she doesn't hide it either.
Now, note about Delilah,
yes, ma'am.
Her name actually means in Hebrew of the night,
mm-hmm.
which kind of gives an indication that she may not be much different than the woman in Gaza.
No, and that's the other kind of play on things that some of the people have, because Samson, who's the sun person, and she's the night person, that was kind of a little twist on the name stuff. Yeah, she's not... Not from the upper crust. Yeah. But the one statement that I find the most disheartening about this whole thing is once Samson has his hair cut, it says that Samson doesn't even know that the Lord had departed from him. His relationship with God had just gotten to the point where he was walking away from God and didn't even know about it or even seem to care about it. And the other side of it is that Israel doesn't really rally to help him. This whole story that we read about, especially with the earlier judges, you'll hear them leading the people of Israel or leading one of the tribes into battle or doing something like that. Samson's, he's a one-off. It's his show and that's it. I'll take care of everything. I'll fight the fight. I'll do whatever. You guys just stay on the sideline. He doesn't involve anyone else. At least that's what's portrayed here. Now, during that 20 years, I don't know what goes on exactly. If there is anything else that gets done, well, I got to hurry. But in this case, Israel, 20 years ago, Judah basically turned over Samson to the Philistines. 20 years later, they still won't rally behind him. Even though he's been a judge, they're not, Samson, you did it to yourself. Now you just take your medicine. The other thing that's kind of interesting about this is that Samuel's life kind of mirrors what Israel had done. Samson is kind of a wonderkind. He's miraculously born by the will of God. And the people of Israel are God's chosen people. Isaac wasn't supposed to be born, but he was. And we know what happened after that. Samson's called to a high life of separation and devotion to God. The children of Israel were. Samson has a rash and opportunistic and immature personality, just like Andrew was talking about. The children of Israel, we saw what they did in the desert. Samson is explorably drawn to foreign women, like Israel was drawn to foreign gods, playing the harlot. Samson experiences the bondage and oppression of the enemy, Israel did. Samson cries out to Yahweh from his oppression, Israel did. Samson's blinded, Israel was. And then finally, Samson was abandoned by God and didn't even know it. And again, kind of the mirror of what goes on as we look at Israel and we look at Samson's life. And I've talked all this stuff about Samson and the kind of the life he lived and the characteristics he had and everything, but he's also in Hebrews chapter 12, which is our... It should be 11, Hebrews 11. Boy, that's a bad thing to do, isn't it? It's Hebrews 11. Sorry about that. And in there it says, what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah of David, and Samuel and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, and obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, and put foreign armies to flight. Goes on to say, all these, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive what was promised, because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they would not be made perfect. But again, Samson, as much as we want to look at Samson and say, this was not good, Samson was used by God and recognized for his faithfulness, and in Hebrews chapter 11. So just in closing, just some things for us to consider from the life of Samson. I apologize for having to hurry through this. Think of others. As we look at Samson's life, Samson was just concerned about himself, consumed with himself and taking care of himself. Paul tells us in Philippians, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interest of others. Use God's gifts to you wisely. Incredible physical talents that God had blessed him with, and yet they were all self-serving for the most part. Yeah, he killed a few Philistines, but for the most part, it was just for me. So don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. Or steal, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And the final thing I had, guys, came from, I don't know if y'all ever heard of Neil Young or not, but he had a song that was called Rust Never Sleeps. And I kind of took that and modified it to Lust Never Sleeps. You guys won't appreciate it. Do what? Unfortunately, I can. And there's actually an acoustic version and electric version. The electric, no, it's not a Rock Band. No, but let me make my point here real quick, guys. Oh, I've written out stuff to say, and I know we're out of time, and I apologize, Pastor. Lust doesn't go away, no matter what age you get to be. Bruce McDonald tells a story of his friend who's 90 years old, and he's gone to him kind of as a mentor, and he asked him, at what point in my life do I get when lust won't affect me, when I'm free of just having to worry about that kind of thing? And the 90-year-old saint looks at Bruce and says, I don't know, I haven't gotten there yet. So just because you battle stuff now, Ethan and Daniel, and I talked to the guys here, the young guys, Mr. Flanagan, I want to call you Patrick, and I apologize. The whole lust thing that propagates society, you're fighting it now, I know. You fight it in school and everything else. When you get to be my age, it doesn't go away. When you get to be 90 years old, it doesn't go away. It's a constant battle. The big thing to remember is up there where Paul writes, and this is Timothy's words to Timothy as Paul's getting ready to die. He tells him to flee youthful lust, but he also says, with those who call on the Lord. So fleeing youthful lust isn't something you do on your own. Don't have to do on your own. You can do it with other godly men and godly women to help you in this fight against lust. And I say that not just to y'all, but to all of us as we battle lust and those kind of things. One of the great undoings of Samson, and that's it. Thank y'all again for your patience with me. We're over a few minutes, and thank y'all.